This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, folks. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Kusu Chuang and Joyce Goh this morning, 6 o'clock on Thursday, the 18th of October. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, stay with us all the way till 10 o'clock today. We'll catch you up on all the news you need to know. Do get in touch with us, 018-789-8899. That's our number to WhatsApp your messages in. And you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to kick off the show now with a look at some interesting news that came out overnight. Now, several public funds in the US that hold shares in Facebook, they are backing a proposal to remove Mark Zuckerberg, who is the CEO of Facebook. They want to remove him as chairman. And they say that Facebook has mishandled several high-profile scandals.
Well, it seems in Congress that the one of the world's biggest companies, by way of, you know, this company is worth $500 million, right? And they still got the chairman and chief executive as the same guy. So if you're, you know, if you're a minority shareholder, that's the last thing you want, because that person can run roughshod over you and you've got no recourse. Especially he also owns the majority of the shares.
Well, remember we spoke about this with Tesla, right? With Elon Musk,
that's right.
And how he is supposed to step down as chairman. But you're right, Chuang, that Zuckerberg owns like 60% of the share. He owns 60% of the voting rights.
That's right.
So will he vote for himself to be out of the board?
Do you know, guys, actually in 2017, a similar proposal to appoint an independent chair, that was voted out as well.
Mm, and right now, he's got majority of voting rights. Like.
So right now they're looking at, I think, this proposal, the current one, that's set to be voted on Facebook's annual shareholder meeting in May 2019. You know, making the chair independent. How will that go through, though? 2017 didn't even make it.
Yeah, in the 2017 proposal, the opposing comments were that Facebook says an independent chair could cause uncertainty, confusion, and inefficiency in the board functions.
I'd like to have some of what they're smoking.
Those were the reasons.
Whether Mark Zuckerberg will willingly vote himself off the board, we don't know. We'll have to find out. But also, I guess, piquing our interest this morning is new research finding that Spain will overtake Japan's long-held position at the top of the world's life expectancy table by 2040. So by 2040, people in Spain will live for 85.8 years on average, marginally edging out the expected lifespans in Japan, which is 85.7 years.
Wow, okay. Wow. Oh, look, I think Spain is one of the few countries in the world which has taxpayer-funded healthcare.
That's right.
Which is one of the reasons, right?
They're in the top 10 of the world's best healthcare systems.
Yeah, plus you go there, it's Balearic bliss, isn't it? I mean, Spain is the home of Ibiza. Have you guys been to Ibiza?
No.
It's gorgeous.
No,
YouTube. Yeah.
Vicariously. Right, but it's also, I don't know whether you guys have noticed this, but the recent findings about the Mediterranean diet. Have you heard that yet?
Amazing.
Apparently, adhering to the Mediterranean diet can prolong people's lives.
Yes.
And the lifestyle.
So a siesta, maybe?
Siesta,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So looking at Mediterranean diet, they're saying that just small amounts of lean meat and chicken, more servings of mostly vegetables, fruits, olive oil, and fish.
Well, I was there 2 years ago. Actually, my colleague Simmons was been there recently, right? Lots of seafood, lots of olive oil, lots of little, like, you know, lots of springs and vegetables. And it's really nice. And you just eat the whole day. You know, a lot of olives as well.
Yeah,
you just munch the whole day. But look, I mean,
eating the whole day, it resonates with me.
And the blues and the sky is like razor sharp blue, radiant blue. The sky is blue, the green, the sea is green. It's beautiful.
What's interesting is that, let's take a look at the top countries that have made at the top of this list, right? So Spain, Japan, Singapore is number 3 at 85.4 years, and Switzerland at 85.2 years. So, you know, I'm wondering how Singapore got to that, you know, life expectancy, right? They're number 3.
There's one common denominator among the top countries, right? Is wealth.
Well, look at the US. The US actually fell quite a fair bit. So the US had the biggest drop in rankings with an average life expectancy of 79.8.
Well, I would die early if I had Donald Trump as my president.
Well, I think Singapore could also be because of their medical
health.
Yeah, their healthcare.
It's in a shambles, right?
No, Singapore.
Oh, Singapore,
I think,
yeah.
I think it could be because of
America is in the shambles, right? Yeah.
Potentially.
Right. Well, we'll come back and take a look at how to determine appropriate workplace behavior. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, coming up to 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on the morning run. Melissa Joyce and Chuang here with you. Modern English there with I Melt With You. One thing you don't want to do is kind of melt in the arms of your co-workers. That is something that Alison Green, the creator of the Workplace Advice column, asked a manager has raised. She's posing a simple question: whatever happened to the simple handshake at work? Because she's arguing that hugging is now common in many workplaces, or increasingly becoming increasingly common as workplaces become more and more informal. So what do you guys think about hugging your colleagues?
Well, it depends which colleague, right?
You would say that.
Talk about melts with you, right? It's a modern release. Thank you very much. No, but honestly, I think this is something we learned from the Matsalis.
Hugging?
Yeah, I think it's a culture thing,
you know,
right?
When you meet people in public and then they do the face kiss, the two kiss,
I get confused.
You know, my head is quite big, right? So sometimes I confuse, is it one kiss or two kiss?
Yeah,
and then I tend
to
headbutt people as a result. And it's not elegant. It's the least socially friendly thing you can do.
Sometimes it's even three kisses. And
yeah,
then,
exactly,
and then
right?
You've stopped and the other person keeps going.
Yeah. And then you meet some European men and then they do the face kiss thing with you. So, and
oh,
I'm like
really?
Quite disconcerted.
Okay.
What does he want to kiss me for? Does he? It's really weird.
It's a form of greeting, right? So,
yeah.
So apparently, so according to Alison Green, she says that hugging hasn't been the norm in I guess many industries. It hasn't become the norm in many industries, but sometimes as kind of workplaces get more and more informal, you have people who kind of enthusiastically want to greet you, right? So they're opening up their arms, they're heading in for a hug. And if you're not a hugger, or if you find, you know, there's a certain kind of level of professional decorum that needs to be upheld, it could be it could lead for an awkward moment.
Yeah, very awkward.
Yeah,
especially when we've got Asian cultures and Asian religions, and not every religion allows you to touch, do you know what I mean? Or even shake hands. Do you know what I mean by that, right?
But you see, I'm a hugger. And I've always
That's okay.
I've always worked in industries that are somewhat more informal, right?
Yeah.
So newsrooms tend to be informal, open, and your colleagues become your friends. So for me, I don't see this as much of an issue, but I can understand if it's a more corporate setting, and that could be, I guess, inappropriate.
But informal doesn't mean hugging, right? I don't know if...
That's a good point.
Yeah, it could be informal because of your relationship with your bosses and all that,
like,
and your
bro,
colleagues.
You can call your boss
but
bro.
But it doesn't mean that you
have
to... Well,
Malik is that kind as well. Like, he's very, you know what I mean, metrosexual that way. Do you know what I mean?
No, I don't.
He's very open to hugging. Like, yo, Malik. Malik heading
really?
In for
is
like
a
hug.
Is he a hugger?
Yeah, major.
Okay,
man.
He's a hugger.
Yeah.
Okay.
Major.
So yeah, but sometimes it's the industry, Mel, as you said, you know, when I was working in the accounting industry.
Accountants, that's the last thing on their minds.
No, but the thing is, formal and informal, so there's always like a Mrs. Ng, there's a Miss Gong.
Oh,
you know, there's even
right.
that part, you know, with Malik, we call him Malik. Right? Mm. Like in the itch, we call
Kitak. For those who don't know, Malik's our boss. Malik Ali is the founder of BFM. And you're right, we do keep it quite informal here in BFM. But I'm sure that many people would find it really weird to address their boss without actually, you know, without the inche or without the mister. And I guess that's, you know, one end of the extreme. The other end of the extreme is when you're hugging your colleagues. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
I guess happy birthday is all right.
Yeah, it's okay.
But goodbye and hello.
I'm not really a hugger with people I don't really know. I mean, despite what people might think. And
yeah, you're looking at us.
Yeah. You know, so it's a bit weird. Do you know what I mean? If you hardly know people, especially in the corporate world, and you get the kind of informality. And I think there's a lot of things that we picked up from Western cultures and Western norms. Having studied there abroad, by and large, for most graduates in Malaysia, right? And in Asia. But it's the 21st century. Do you know what I mean? We don't have enough Asian values, not just in the workplace, but just in the home life as well.
Okay, so
we pick up a lot of stuff from the Western world.
So, in a nutshell, hugging your colleagues acceptable? Not acceptable. What do you guys think?
I find it a bit weirder, depending
on
the
balance
the occasion.
Of it all,
but informal to me, it could be hi Malay, hi Chuang, hi Melissa, yeah. But it's not so much of I need to hug you guys. But yeah, and if you're not so much of a hugger, what can you do for me? I just put out my hand and like, oh, I'm here to shake hands.
Shake hands, love.
Yeah, because it's not like you can say, put up both your hands and say, I'm sorry, I'm going to step back away from this hug. Yeah.
And then it's like, wow, then the whole meeting starts off a bit awry. Do you know what I mean?
That's right. All right, well, tell us what you think about appropriate workplace behavior. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. You know, we haven't actually even gone into the whole issue of hugging or that kind of behavior being misconstrued as something else.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Mm. All right, we're going to come back and take a look at what the new and improved TV Pendidikan should look like next on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 620. Right now, you're listening to The Morning Run with Chuang Joyce and me, Melissa. That was Phaser Days with Lucky Girl. And a couple of WhatsApps have come in, and I just want to read them out at the moment. So Yasmin has weighed in on our conversation about determining what is appropriate workplace behavior, whether you should hug your colleagues in workplaces that are becoming increasingly informal. She says that unless she knows the person or has spent time with them socially, she would not want to hug a co-worker unless it's a birthday or a farewell. And that also depends on the gender, religion and age. Whether you're close to a religious male colleague, then maybe not. Maybe send a virtual hug instead.
Yeah, okay.
You can do that on WhatsApp.
Hug. Oh, yes, can I?
Okay. I can send you one, Chuang.
All right.
All right, tell us what you think. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, there's been news that the Education Ministry is looking to bring back TV Pendidikan, or educational TV, and that can be accessed for free either on national TV on RTM or so, or online. This according to the Minister of Education, Dr. Mazli Malik. So the Education Ministry is now developing its own content and hoping that it can be shared online.
So, Mummy Joyce, what do you think?
I don't know. It's just, it depends on the content.
That's
and the
right.
question here is how many people are watching, like, national TV. That's another. The kids, a lot of them, how many people are watching the actual like TV? A lot of them are on screens
TV,
right now.
Yeah.
And also, do you remember TV Pendidikan much?
I vaguely remember it in the 70s, back in Penang.
What was your takeaway from
that? It was
that?
Just the worst. It was just the worst. It was like the pits.
Really? I looked forward to that because that was like, TV privileges were such a thing back then. Mm. It wasn't like you plonked your kid in front of a... we didn't have our own screens back then, right? Mm. So getting to watch TV, whether it was cartoons or TV Pendidikan, was a privilege. You know, you look forward to your time in front of the TV, whatever you were watching.
Yeah, you see, my parents were not anal about me, having too many hours on TV or not. So I just got the run of the box, right? And you get very quickly selective about what is good and what isn't bad, what is not good.
Oh, quite so, the discerning child,
because I read Tolstoy too.
Oh,
no, I didn't.
Sorry.
But yeah, I mean, look, it's not the platform, Joyce. I think it's the quality of
the content.
Yeah, if it's good, then go and turn on the TV for sure.
Daddy Chuang, what do you think about this? Would your kids watch TV Pendidikan?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the content. What you deliver to kids, and it's going to be good enough to to surpass Fortnite dancing. Do you know what I mean? On YouTube.
Yeah. All right, so what are
unboxing toys?
Yes. Unboxing toys. Yes. The kind of stuff you get internationally is so good. Mm. Even I think it's amazing. I spent
really?
Like
unboxing
last,
videos?
Yeah, last night I spent 7 minutes watching the new Nerf whatever, right?
Okay.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Like a review.
I must say there's this series that my kid is into called Science for Kids. And it's really, even I get drawn to it. Sometimes he's watching it.
Is it educational?
It is educational. It teaches science, but the way they do it, the way they it's produced, the show, they have like a puppet and a lady, and she's teaching science stuff, but they make it so it's so easy to understand, and at the same time you're just hooked into it. It's really well produced.
Yeah,
so
I
at the end
agree.
Is the content, and it's and you have to compete with so many out there, international content.
So what you're saying is that while the idea for TV Pendidikan is a good idea, the content is king, right? So whether the Education Ministry would be the best person to create best platform to create the content. Maybe I'll
well, right? they have to look for someone who can do it. I also feel it's the platform as how, where are they going to consume it, though?
Oh, no. For sure, the education ministry will deliver all over the world, you know, platforms, smartphones. Mm. He said we're going to flood social media with it. He said himself.
I think you still need the national TV platform because, Joyce, there are a lot of other people
who
may not have,
device,
right?
That's
so,
true.
So, the rural areas, perhaps, you know, this could be an avenue for them. You know, you've seen stuff on Astro, right, when it comes to these educational TV programs. Going into exams religiously watch this because it's a way of, I guess, like a class, you know, like you sit down in front of the TV and you practice, or you practice language skills.
I guess RTM is a platform, and then have it also tailored for the screens, like the smartphones and tablets as well, so you can reach everybody.
Yeah, I think we've got to realise the limitations, right? Because the government have to work within guidelines and principles and basically censorship criteria. Mm. Whereas on social media, and if you're a content creator from the US, right, you don't have these guidelines.
Right.
You're judged solely in terms of your views on how good your stuff is.
Sure.
Right? And that is the only criterion.
So Shamin has weighed in on WhatsApp saying that TV Pendidikan should be available on other platforms to catch up with other channels as well. Mm. I want to give the Education Ministry a suggestion. Based on my niece's viewing habits on social on YouTube, she loves these unboxing videos. So I reckon maybe have like a TV Pendidikan content where you have unboxing videos, but you know to unwrap them, you have to solve an equation
or learn
something before you unbox a new toy or whatever. Yeah. All right, tell us what you think. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Thank you, Colin, for weighing in on Twitter. But we've got the 6:30 news bulletin coming up shortly. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:39 right now. This is The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Kusu Chong and Joyce Goh. It's Thursday, the 18th of October. Now, we want you to join our conversation this morning. We're lonely, just the three of us here. We want you to come and talk to us. 018-789-8899. That's the number to send your WhatsApp messages to. Or you can tweet us, if you prefer, at WhatsApp. Our handle on Twitter is at BFM Radio. That was the Red Hot Chili Peppers that you just heard with Dark Necessities. And speaking of which, let's talk about the smoking ban. There was an opinion piece by Joan Lau. She's the executive editor at Malay Mail Online. And this opinion piece was titled, Watching the Rights of Smokers Go Up in Smoke. And that's gotten us talking this morning, essentially. So Joan is a non-smoker. She's an industry veteran. And she has argued, she says in this op-ed that she is appalled, and that is the word that she used. She's appalled by the government's move to make smoking outdoors illegal. So if I could just quote the op-ed to quote her, if I am going to support civil liberties and human rights, then I have to support the rights of people who smoke. Let them, just not near me, end quote. What do you guys think?
Well, this is the floodgates argument, isn't it? Because if you... And obviously, there's a huge justification for this from a healthcare perspective, from a sanitation perspective, and from a public impact perspective. But if you allow this to happen, what's to stop the administration or the government in future saying, well, you can't eat this, you can't do that, you can't dress this way, you can't do that. And then after that, it becomes much more than a nanny state, than George Orwell's dream.
Look.
Well, no, it's a floodgates argument. And I think that's why she's doing it. Because then basically the state becomes your boss, and they have this nanny state mentality, and they govern everything that you from A to Z. That's the problem.
Joyce,
well, it's not entirely, you can't smoke entirely, right? There'll be a designated smoking area or where, I mean, that you can choose, I think for buildings or wherever, eateries and all that, they can have a designated smoking.
So she's, what Joan is arguing is, she's saying that the government hasn't made that clear. So Joan's argument is that if smokers choose to harm themselves, let them, but she wants to see a space being given to them. And I have to say, I don't think the government has said that they're not going to give a space. All they're saying is that they want to ban outdoor smoking specifically to, you know, restaurants, maybe public areas. I think the market will take care of itself. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that restaurants will wise up to the fact that they don't want to lose smoking customers, and they will create an area, a designated area. I think that this is something that we will kind of evolve into. We'll figure out how to make it work. I just don't think that I think it's a false corollary to say that just because the government is on this kind of anti-smoking clampdown with the policies and the raising of cigarette prices, it doesn't mean that they're not respecting the rights of smokers. I don't see it as one over the other.
Yeah, well, and Joan also in her story she wrote about how she started her career as a journalist, and at a time smoking was allowed in a newsroom, and it was indoors and air conditioned, right? And then there's this whole
I remember that. I remember my boss smoking in his office. I mean, yeah, my
editor. You could smoke on an airplane. Remember?
That I don't remember.
Yeah, back in the 80s.
Way back when. Wow.
Over time, we evolve, and smokers will find a way or a place that they can smoke at, right? That is legal.
Yeah, so I also think it's quite interesting to take a look at, you know, why I know many smokers who go overseas and comply completely with the tobacco ban in public spaces, right? Yeah. In Australia, you're not even allowed to smoke in private vehicles if there are children
really?
In the car.
Wow.
Yes. Why is it okay for other developed countries to do that, and then yet we're up in arms here thinking that it's not defending the freedom of rights?
Yeah, but actually,
I say Australia is a huge nanny state. Everything.
Okay.
I mean,
you're talking about nanny state, then Singapore shouldn't bring in Singapore.
Well, yeah, for sure. Singapore, Australia, the big hand of the government. I mean, you know, when you drive along any street in Sydney, for example, every 200 meters or so, you see cops. You know, they've got their walkie-talkies, they've got their truncheons, they've got their devices. You don't step out of line. You can't even overtake on a freeway, on a highway, without signalling. Everybody keeps to 60. They are so afraid of, you know...
But this is where enforcement works.
Yeah, which is good and which is bad, because everybody in Australia tiptoes around the issue. I mean, they don't know whether they're coming or going half the time.
So, you know, with the nanny state, I think that there is a certain... I mean... There's a distinction to be made between, I guess, governing, I mean, certain laws or certain policies in place, and then others being kind of stepping over the line, right?
So if you have a sensible government, that's okay. And for now, I think by and large, we've got a sensible government, but there's every chance, because we've got democracy, that the wrong bunch will get voted in the next time. And then what are you going to say? You've got people saying, oh, well, you know, last time they could do this to smokers. How about this time we do that to your diet, and then next time we do that to your dress? And then, you know, it can go pretty bad, you know, quite quickly.
What about the argument that it is, you know, health problems that arise from...
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So when it comes to cigarettes, no question, right?
Okay. Well, so if we were to take a look at, say, you know, restrictive policies on gambling, and, you know, Singapore being an example of how gambling addiction is an issue, and they've put restrictive policies on that. Do you consider that nanny state as well?
I'd say in the same grouping are things like smoking, gambling, drinking, for example. They would be the same
sins,
kind of...
The sin vices,
right? But then what if you extend it to what you eat? And for example, you might say, oh, for example, some of you, you know, you can't eat a certain kind of meat.
A sugar tax.
So you can't have sugar. You can't have pork. You can't have whatever, right? And then you can't dress a certain way because it offends principles. You can't play music above a certain...
We actually have that already at that time,
yeah,
right?
Like, yeah.
If you go into government offices,
some ladies are asked to put on longer skirts or wear pants or whatever.
Guys, you have to make a distinction, though, between a ban and guidelines, right? So dress guidelines, as much as I hate them, I don't think you have any business telling me what to wear, but they're guidelines. They're not enforceable. You're not fined or kicked out, as far as I know. A sugar tax is a tax. They're just making it more inconvenient for you to consume and become obese, right? As opposed to telling you, you cannot have sugar.
Yeah, it's
at
like
all.
They don't ban sugar at all.
Yeah.
It's just they're making it inconvenient or more expensive. So I don't know. Penang Heights might not incur that much cost. But yeah, but coming back to smoking, this has to do, as Mel pointed out, is that health point as
when
well.
When it comes to smoking, no question, because there's a clear line between the damage you can cause and what you're doing to yourself. Clear. But when it's less clear, for example, your diets, your way of dressing, the music levels you play in your car, for example,
Or at home.
At home. You know, so as it becomes then much more grey. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is a really kind of great conversation. It's got people talking, and I love that people are able to talk about this. Tell us what you think. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back with more in the Morning Run. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:52 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Goh and Kusu Chuang. And we're talking about the smoking ban and the, I guess, the op-eds or the opinion pieces that have come out in the recent days about the rights of smokers. So specifically on the Malay Mail Online, the executive editor, Joan Lau, in an op-ed titled "Watching the Rights of Smokers Go Up in Smoke." Lots of you have weighed in on WhatsApp and Twitter. We want you to keep them coming. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Let's read a couple of them. I particularly like this, this message that talked a little bit about how coming up with regulations and policies, this could be a class-based thing. So open-air eateries, mama's stalls and cigarettes have a largely similar consumer base. The same people who cannot afford e-cigarettes, vapes, shisha, and the finer pleasures in life. So curiously, this person is saying that, do you think the PH government's policy is ever so slightly classed bias?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Then you've got also Lishun, who says that, to be honest, there are several things that are proven to increase risk of cancer and cardiovascular diseases, being smoking, alcohol and obesity, long proven. So we're regulating smoking and drinking, but regulating sugar, oil and sodium is necessary. So this person is in favour of more regulation on more things.
KF also says that he is not a smoker, never will be, but wonders how the eateries will retaliate. So imagine if you go to Mama and watch football without smoking, plus it's part of the eateries' revenue. So a lot of the comments coming in, guys, has been about why hasn't the government created a designated smoking area? And for me, I don't think that that's the government's role to create a designated smoking area. I think life will find a way. If you want to smoke, you'll find a way to do it, right? You'll find a space to go and smoke. And business will find a way. They will create, if they want to keep those customers, they will create a corner for that.
Yeah, because you have designated areas, then you'll have all kinds of people, all kinds of habits saying, well, I want space as well. So if I like playing Scrabble, I want to have a place to play Scrabble.
Have a designated area to play Scrabble.
We also have a tweet coming in from Christian Brooker, who says that smokers don't have rights. Smoking is a privilege, not a right. We also have Alan Toh tweeting in asking, how many Malaysian lives will it take for us to realise smoking has zero benefits but all cancer-related illnesses?
So coming back to the comment about it being class biased, I thought that was a really fascinating point to bring up. I don't know whether it's class biased. For me, I'm just thinking that we've got two medical doctors at the top of the government at the moment.
Yeah.
Perhaps this could be, we're seeing, I guess, a certain bias in terms of health issues. Right?
Which is, I guess, good on the balance of everything concerned, you know. But, I mean, obviously, this is something which has lit up the imagination.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people weighing in on this because they feel very strongly about it. Many, I guess, it's quite divisive. So you have people who say, oh, what about the rights of, secondhand smoke breathers? We don't want to be breathing that air as well.
That's personally coming from a tweet also from Paul Lau, who says that, smoke from cigarettes goes into the air I breathe, shortening the lives of my family and I. Smokers have refused to put it away even when I ask nicely, so government should step in.
Yeah, I've been to many open-air restaurants and, I when I see a guy smoking next to me, I'm forced to go and move away because no one wants to have in secondhand smoke when you're eating. That's the last thing you want,
Right. A lot of the messages coming in this morning has also touched on the issue of enforcement, right? And I think that's also important. So if you're going to have a ban, how will you enforce it? And leaving it up to businesses may not be the best the best way, to leave it up to, you know, the mamas and the open air eateries to enforce this ban. So shifting the burden of enforcement, who's going to be responsible for this, I think is a valid question to ask as well.
There's also someone else who weighed in saying that open air restaurants and public places and Hat Yai over the border have banned smoking for a long time already. It's been years since already. And it's then the restaurant becomes incumbent upon them to enforce that ban. And then there's yet another person who says, is Oktoberfest a ban or a guideline? You know how that whole fracas about Oktoberfest,
right?
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been able to answer that question, KW. I will find out and perhaps get back to you on that. But, you know, I do want to come back to a look at overseas countries who have developed economies who have enforced smoking bans like this. You know, for me, one of the things that what really caught my attention was the private vehicle smoking ban, right?
So
in Australia. So it's not a federal government ban, but it's each individual state has different types of private vehicle bans. And this is particularly interesting because the private vehicle is your space.
It's your personal space.
It's your private property. So can the government create a rule to say that you're not allowed to smoke in your own space, property?
So that was my issue, right? Because at home, if you have children, then what? You can't smoke in your own house as well? Do you know what I mean? Well, so that's what I mean by the floodgates argument.
Well,
where do you stop and where do you start?
Well, and we have New South Wales, we have Queensland, all, enforcing this ban that you're not allowed to smoke in private vehicles with children under the age of 16. 16, mind you. So still quite, All right, tell us what you think. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll come back and take a look at more of your messages. But coming up next is the 7 o'clock news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.